articles but don't have time to search the web looking for the most compelling stories? Then US Sports Pages is for you. Why spend hours going to multiple sites looking to find sports articles when we can do the work for you? Our producers go through every newspaper in the country and pick out the best sports articles separated by sport, dramatically reducing your prep time. We also include sports and entertainment kicker stories. USSportsPages.com is the only site you'll need to get your sports fix. Check us out today. The daily links at USSportsPages.com.
The Senate is set to vote on gun laws today. Democrats used the recent Orlando mass shooting as a reason to rush legislation.
If there is reasonable suspicion that the person, when they do the background check, is a potential terrorist, the gun sale can be denied.
That was California Senator Dianne Feinstein. Republican leaders scheduled late-day procedural votes on four laws today after the Democratic filibuster last week. All four will likely fail to hit the 60-vote threshold needed to move forward. Some huge Supreme Court decisions are expected today. One involves the abortion case in Texas that requires abortion doctors to have admitting privileges in local hospitals. The immigration decision involves the Obama administration's efforts to overturn a lower court ruling blocking his executive action, which will allow 4 million people to stay in the U.S. without the threat of deportation. This is USA Radio News.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
You've messed up your daughter's haircut. Do you A, get spiritual?
Mom, where's the mirror?
Beauty is within. Oh.
B, find the positives.
Less time blow drying, more time texting?
Or C, show empathy.
Mom, you really don't have
twinsies.
I kinda love it. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on adoption, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
A pastor in Sacramento who gave an anti-gay sermon says he's glad that protests have brought his church media attention.
Pastor Roger Jimenez telling his congregation that he wished more people had died in that massacre that killed 49 people at a gay nightclub in Orlando. On Sunday, about 1,000 protesters gathered outside the Verity Baptist Church holding signs critical of the pastor's message. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
The Cleveland Cavaliers are the NBA champions. They beat the Golden State Warriors last night 93-89 to win Game 7 and claim the team's first ever NBA title. A plane en route from Houston to Phoenix yesterday had to be rerouted because temperatures were so extreme in Arizona. The United Express flight wasn't far from Sky Harbor International Airport when it turned back, the company says, due to weather. It was a record high for June 19th in Phoenix at 118 degrees. Temperatures should be around the same today. NASCAR driver Mike Wallace and his daughter are recovering after they were attacked outside of a concert Friday night. Wallace was leaving a Rascal Flatts show in Charlotte when three men reportedly jumped him, beat him unconscious, and continued kicking him in the face. Wallace's daughter suffered minor injuries while trying to protect her father. Three men in their 20s were charged with assault and later released on bond. This is USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. For more news, we're on the web at usaradio.com.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
The weather this afternoon will be sunny with a high near 90. Southwest winds around 7 miles per hour. Tonight, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly after 1 a.m. It'll be partly cloudy with a low around 64. Southwest winds 5 to 8 miles an hour. And the chance of precipitation is 30%. Tuesday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 9 a.m. then a slight chance of showers between 9 and 1 p.m., then a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m. So, in other words, most of the day there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms. After that, it's supposed to be mostly sunny with a high near 86, northwest winds 5 to 8 miles an hour, and the chance of precipitation is, again, around 30%. Tuesday night, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 a.m., and then partly cloudy with a low around 56, calm winds, and chance of precipitation is 20%. Wednesday, sunny, finally, with a high near 83, light northwest winds coming 6 to 11 miles per hour in the morning, and Wednesday night, a slight chance of showers after 3 a.m. It'll be partly cloudy with a low around 59. Good afternoon and welcome to Mental Health Matters. This is NAMI's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in a state, every state in the union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We work out of our homes. We have no paid staff. We don't have an office, etc. And what we try to do is try to help people or families or individuals who have a mental health issue. And we do this in various ways. One, we teach a 12-week family-to-family class for families who have someone in their family who has a mental health issue. And it sort of teaches them what to say, what not to say in a crisis, what to do, what not to do in a crisis, explains medications, side effects, etc. And everything is free. The class is free. Everything is free. All the material that is given out is free. In fact, my wife and I just finished teaching one about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks ago. We also run a support group, which is open to anyone who'd like to come and talk. And when you come to the support group, you're among people who either have been there and done that or are going through the same problem you are. We have a course called Educating the Educators. In today's society and economic situation, a lot of times both husband and wife have to work, and they a lot of times don't get home till late in the day. So a lot of times teachers are the ones who spend during the week a lot of time with the children, and they may see something that the parents may not notice. And the class teaches them how to pick up on certain things. If a child was 2 years ago active and answered questions and hung around with friends at break time and, you know, so on and so forth, and then 2 years later is sullen, don't answer, you know, looks angry all the time, they can pick up on that and maybe help the parents get a diagnostic evaluation. We have a course called Helping the Law Enforcement. CIT training. It's called Crisis Intervention Training. But it also helps all law enforcement when they get to a house, when they get a call for someone who has a mental health issue, what to expect. So, and there's a lot of other courses and so on and so forth. And, you know, but everything we do is free. If you ever have to reach out to us, our phone number is 908-284-0500. That's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24 hours a day. As I said, we're all volunteers, but we do check it at least twice a day, and we promise we will get back to you within 12 hours. We are very privileged today to have this show, Mental Health Matters. I am your host, Larry Cartwright. I have Grace Buchanan as my co-host. And we are very privileged to have John Haspel. Am I saying that right, John?
You are.
Oh, all right. You got one for one there. Who is an instructor for integrative medicine, both at the Hunterdon Medical Center and also in private practice. And, John, first of all, I always ask people, you know, and you've been on with the Medical Center show, and I may have asked you then because I ask a lot of people, how did you get into this type of work? You know, some people say, well, I needed a job, and this came up, and that's what I've been doing. Other people say, you know, I've always wanted to do it. My family did it, or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm always just curious, you know, how someone gets into their type of work. So how did you get into this?
It's a pretty good story. Thank you for having me, Larry and Grace, and I'm honored to be on NAMI's Hour. It relates to mental health. When I was about 19, I first came across Eastern philosophy. Somebody gave me a book on called Siddhartha, which is a novel on Siddhartha Gautama's life. And about a day later, a book by a gentleman named Krishnamurti, which leads towards Eastern philosophy. And that got my interest going. I wouldn't start developing that interest until about 6 or 7 years later. By the time I was in my late teens, early 20s, I was a full-blown alcoholic and a drug addict. And I spent most of my days at that time in my life drinking and drugging. Mm-hmm. And as part of that recovery, I was told it'd be very useful for me to develop meditation. And so I started looking at different types of meditation and studying with different teachers. And it made all the difference in my life. One of the things, the most important thing, is it allowed me to stop drinking, stop using drugs. It gave me some measure of control with the anxiety that I had that I didn't know I was self-medicating with. And it's led to, I'm a little over 60 now, so it's led to a lifetime of practice and now teaching the last 6 years. So.
That's awesome. That really is. How does meditation help your body? I mean, you know, you said it helps your anxiety. I want to get into that also, but how did it help your body?
It very, very quickly, you realize when you're using a proper method, and we can get into that a little bit later, what I mean by that. You learn a direct way of relaxing, of bringing some quiet into your own body. And the effect, again, if done correctly, is profound. And so if you think about a person in any state of constant upset, whether it's alcohol or drugs or an emotional upset, your body is always in a constant state of stress. And as you develop meditation, you start diminishing very directly that stress and the stress response in your body. So I'm not a doctor. I'm not even a therapist. Right. So I can't explain the whole chemical process. But one of the things that you start doing immediately is bringing into control the release of cortisol, which is the stress hormone.
Right.
And that has a direct effect on the physical body. So what was very important to me was that I found a way to start feeling a little better immediately.
Right.
And that helped diminish the urge to reach for a drug or a drink or some other compulsive behavior. So important.
When you said quiet, then how do you – what did you – would you elaborate on that a little
bit? I realize that's a pretty vague answer. My body became quiet.
Yeah.
I guess the
when I want quiet, I go in the other room away from my wife. But, you know.
You don't want to put that on the air.
Yeah, why not? It's a truth. And she knows it. You know.
I guess what I mean is for the first time in many, many years, I started to feel okay in my body with just whatever was occurring. It was all right. And I didn't realize at the time that I was beginning to understand that even the quality of my mind changed from moment by moment. Except that at that point I was so reactive that it was hard to see that. And I was I kept creating an agitated mind state. Very quickly with meditation, I was able to develop a certain amount of concentration so that I could stay with whatever was present. It didn't need to be any different, which is really the underlying motivation for compulsive behavior is the need to change how you feel constantly and to try to carry yourself into one type of feeling. And that's such a vague feeling. It's unattainable.
When you say it helped with anxiety, now anxiety, there's in the mental health field, there's a numerous, what's the word, under anxiety, there's a numerous bunch of illnesses, post-traumatic stress, ADHD, you know, on and on. So how did meditation help with anxiety?
It's a great question. There's all types of levels to anxieties and different contributing factors. One of the common underlying factors is a very self-absorbed view of the world. In other words, you're hypervigilant of what is occurring in your life and to you, and you tend to see life as happening to you, as something that's coming, almost coming after you. And that self-absorbed view creates ongoing anxiety. It's a very hyper-acute view of life as life is occurring, but again, occurring to you specifically.
Right.
As you can develop concentration, and I should say that I teach meditation within a broader framework, but the meditation method starts developing concentration, and the broader framework allows you to see your relationship with the outside world in a much more realistic way. You're no longer the center of everything that's occurring. And that shift alone can have a profound effect. I've had quite a few students that, through military and other situations, suffer from PTSD, right. And they've come to the class. Some have developed it just from their environment, and almost to a person, they've achieved at least a measure of calm and quiet and a diminishing of the effects of anxiety.
Right, right.
It's so important, although I don't overemphasize breathing. We use a method. Shamatha means to quiet the mind or to gain a tranquil mind, and we do that by being mindful of the sensation of breathing in our bodies. The other word, vipassana, means to gain insight, and it's really to gain insight into your relationship to the world. And we first do that by quieting the mind, by using this mindfulness of the breath. So it's really the essence of the practice. But we don't overemphasize breathing in any particular way. In other words, it's not important that you breathe deep. It's not important that you breathe shallow. It's not all that important that you recognize how you're breathing, but simply to recognize the sensation of breathing. Now, people that have had a lot of stress in their lives, particularly people with PTSD, often have issues about just being mindful of the breath. They have a difficult time just doing that initially. Because once you start relaxing, a lot of the tension that you're holding just wants to release itself. And that can come up as even more anxiety. So for someone who's suffering from PTSD or any type of anxieties, I recommend that you start meditating with short periods of time, but more often. In other words, 1 or 2 minutes is more than enough to begin to build an effective meditation practice.
Well, if you do 1 or 2 minutes, that's 1 or 2 minutes that you were doing that you weren't doing before, too.
Exactly.
So,
it's
like people say about exercising and so on and so forth. You know, if you do 5 minutes, that's 5 minutes more than what you were doing when you weren't doing any. So,
And just exercise, one session builds on the next.
Right, right.
Again, for people with anxiety disorders, anybody that feels like they're thinking too much, which is a lot of people come to me and say, I have this monkey mind. I don't think I can meditate. I've never been able to not teach someone that was willing. And again, if you start out with just a few minutes, very quickly you'll be able to overcome that and build a relatively calm and peaceful mind.
You know, it's ironic that when you talk about anxiety with the mental health field, when we give presentations and so on and so forth, one of the things we do is we have a PowerPoint and we ask people, we list various mental illnesses, schizophrenia, depression, bipolar, anxiety. Which one is the biggest percentage of people affected? And it's anxiety. There's a reason for that, because it has 5 or 6 subcategories, but still it is anxiety. And and post-traumatic stress is one, and like I said, ADHD is another. There used to be ADD, now it's ADHD. But, it covers a vast majority, but when it's number one in the mental health issues, it's out there, and more people than you care to realize are suffering from it.
It's extremely debilitating, and I think a lot of people don't even know that they're suffering from anxiety, because they think, well, they should just buckle up, and that just doesn't work. You can't fight your way out of it. It's a true mental illness, and it needs a true diagnosis and a realistic way of recovery. It can't be dismissed. It's not something. I mean, when I first started meditating, I suffered from anxiety. I was so anxious. Now, I didn't get a clinical diagnosis until a little while later, but I was diagnosed clinically with anxiety, social anxiety disorder. Before I was diagnosed, I thought there was just something wrong with me. I thought I was just living in fear, and that was just the way I was. I didn't think that there was any way to be different. There was a time in my life I was afraid to answer a telephone or open a piece of mail. And part of that was this underlying hyper-focus or hyper-vigilance about myself and what was occurring in the world. And so an extreme example of that was I can't open a piece of mail. I can't answer a phone because I'm worried what's on the other side of that. And that had taken over my life. In a sense, I became over-mindful of that fear and anxiety. Right. But to me, that's another way of saying I was mindless of what was really occurring in my life. And so this learning to develop meditation and develop a more peaceful and calm mind, and then to develop a refined mindfulness of how to see life, changed everything.
You know, just so I want to clear something up, everybody suffers from depression at one point in their life.
Mm, yeah.
Could be you lost your job or, you know, whatever the case may be. Everybody has anxiety. Going on your first date, you're going on a job interview, you know, things like that. The difference being is how long they last.
Yeah.
You know, like you can get depressed, you lose your job. So, yeah, you're depressed. You got a house, you got mortgage, you got kids, you got, you know, your wife, you got to pay car payments, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, you can be depressed. I know. I've been there.
Yeah.
But the difference being after a week or so, you say, I got to get off my butt and get out there and, you know, find another job because I got all these bills and everything. That's the difference between, like, anxiety or depression and someone that has a mental health issue that it lasts for, you know, quite a long time or all the time.
Yes. You know? Yeah. It's risen to the level of a mental health issue when you, 2 weeks go by and you can't get off that couch and do something about it. You're stuck there. I think in both cases, and I'm not trying to portray mindfulness and meditation as a panacea for everything, but it can be very helpful in that person who is just anecdotally depressed or anxious, and those that have an ongoing true disorder of depression or mental illness. It just gives you a different way of seeing yourself in relation to the world, and it also gives you a direct tool of interrupting that constant self-absorbed focus. It's a respite during your day and even during your own thoughts. One of the instructions that I give in meditation is to not be distracted by your own thoughts. And that's one of the things that we do to maintain anxiety. We're constantly thinking about hurtful things. This is a way of directly interrupting that. And the more you do it, the more likely you're better to gain a handle on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got to ask now, what do you do when you meditate?
That's the important question, isn't it?
You know, so I would hope so. Because the
quick answer is not much.
Okay.
the primary focus in our meditation practice is mindfulness of the breath. And so, I can talk you through the instructions that I give when I teach meditation is to sit quietly, whether you're sitting on a floor or on a chair, really doesn't matter.
Okay.
To become mindful of the sensation of breathing in your body, to gently close your mouth, gently close your eyes, and let yourself relax. Hold your back straight but not stiff, your ears aligned with your shoulders, nose aligned with your navel, but hold yourself very lovingly, very gently, and allow yourselves to settle wherever you are, settle onto your seats, settle into your body, and settle into your mind. And then the next thing I instruct is to take a moment to notice the sensation of breathing in your body. Just be mindful of that sensation. And it's amazing how many times people will say, I've been alive for 20, 30, 40, 60 years, and I never once thought about my breath. And so that in itself can be a profound experience. So become mindful of the sensation of breathing in your body. And then as you've established a certain mindfulness of your breath after just a moment or two, notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings. Thought should be flowing. Many people think that meditation is about developing a trance-like state or a state where you're not aware of your thoughts. That's not what I teach, and it's not very useful. It's just an escape. To be mindful of your thoughts that are flowing. And as you recognize that you're caught up in your thinking, simply acknowledge that and come back to the sensation of breathing. And those two components, recognizing that you're caught up in your thinking and then coming back to the sensation of breathing, is a meditation practice. It's not just being mindful of your breath. And the reason why I say that is many people initially will get frustrated because they're not able to be mindful of the breath for more than a few moments. But every time you come back to the sensation of breathing, you recognize you're caught up in your thoughts, come back to the sensation of breathing, you're deepening your concentration. And that's the purpose of meditation. So every meditation session then is successful.
Okay. And every time I thought of meditation, I always thought of people sitting on the floor with their legs crossed and, yep, you know, arms folded. And but it doesn't have to be that way, does it?
No, it doesn't have to be that way. I happen to sit on the floor because I've been sitting that way for 35 years, and it's the most comfortable way for me to sit. I got a feeling as I get a little older, I'll probably be back up in a chair. But
I have a feeling you're right. Yeah. nothing personal.
No, it's coming. I would say in Frenchtown, in my center in Frenchtown, about three-quarters of the folks sit on the floor, which is maybe a dozen, mm-hmm, or 14 or 16. And then six or eight regularly sit on chairs at the back of the room. In Flemington and Lambertville, it's a little bit different. Almost everybody sits on chairs. But it has no bearing on how successful a meditation practice is, whatever is most comfortable. That idea or the well-known posture of sitting on the floor, it's either called a full lotus or a half lotus. It began where meditation began in the East in India, and that's simply how they sat.
Mm.
So that tradition has continued, but it has no real bearing on whether a meditation method will be successful. How you sit, be comfortable.
We talked before the show about a new what do you call it?
Class. You're
class.
On.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thanks, Grace. I went blank for a minute.
Thank you.
A new class that you're starting, or
the mindfulness-based recovery workshops.
Yes,
yes, about.
And what is it called?
Mindfulness-based recovery.
Okay.
So it's just what the name implies. It's a good name. It brings the understanding of mindfulness into the field of recovery from addiction, alcoholism, and all compulsive behaviors. And so, like we talked about earlier, even anxiety can be looked at as a compulsive behavior. It's something that we keep recreating in our own minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've had four or five workshops now, and they've been very successful in assisting people in developing tools that they can use themselves and address their compulsive behaviors and their anxiety and their depression. Again, I'm not claiming that it's a complete cure. It's not. I don't think anything is, by
no,
the way.
I
think
don't either.
The beauty of your show and what you've told me that you do is that you're bringing in all different modalities that are supportive, and this is one of them.
Right.
So mindfulness-based recovery brings the framework of something called the Eightfold Path, which is simply a way of integrating into our lives a way of seeing ourselves and our lives differently in a more realistic way. And it develops that in a way that we can use them on a daily basis to minimize our compulsive behaviors.
And where is this held at?
The next one is going to be July 30th at Hunterdon Integrative Medicine. I also hold them every other month at my center in Frenchtown. Two websites that would help you find information about that, mindfulnessbasedrecovery.com and crossrivermeditation.com. And also the Hunterdon Integrative Medicine's website, and I don't know the URL of that. I should, but it's out there.
They can look it up on on the web.
Yeah.
Is there a phone number in case they wanted to reach out to you? Or
you call me 908-391-9079.
Okay, that's 908-391-9079. I don't have a good memory. I have it written down.
Yeah,
that's
why
I wouldn't have been able to remember it, but I have it written down there. When someone comes to your class, do they have to bring a mat or a radio or whatever?
Please don't bring a radio, because I do.
I mean, like music. I mean, you know.
Yeah, no, I understand. I don't recommend using music during meditation.
Okay.
That itself can be a distraction. So if you think about or remember that what we're trying to do is develop concentration, mindfulness of the breath does that very well. Other things can be a distraction. So there's nothing you need to bring. We have chairs. We have zafu and zabutons, which are cushions and mats to sit on. And just an open mind and maybe...
You want to go back before the mats? What was it called?
Oh, Zafu and Zabutan.
Okay. You want to explain that? Because I have never heard of it.
Those are just words that are bandied about in the meditation community that refer to a cushion, a pillow, okay, and a mat that's underneath. That's
there we go. Now you're talking my language. Yeah, you know, so, in Brooklyn, that's what we call a pillow. You know,
pillows and mats.
Pillows and mats. Okay, I understand that. It was when you came out with the other that I lost. But all right, let me ask you something else. Someone comes to your class. I assume it's like once a week?
Yep.
Okay.
I have four classes a week.
Okay. So someone comes to your class. What do they do for the other 6 days till they come back?
Oh.
Can they do that stuff at home? Or?
Yes. Well, hopefully they will. Hopefully they'll begin to develop a meditation practice, and once it's developed, you continue to deepen it. So almost at every class we have a newcomer, and so I give them basic instructions. And then I suggest to them to go home and start with 2 or 3 minutes at a time and not to try to do too much because most people will just get frustrated. But if you keep it to short periods of time consistently, twice a day, pretty soon you'll have a meditation practice. And then it's important to develop the wider framework of this Eightfold Path that I talk about. And that's simply at first just reading about it, learning what it is. And I teach that in my classes and also on my website. And then to start integrating these eight factors into your life. But it's all supported by the developed concentration that's rooted in meditation. There's a recording on my website of Shamatha Vipassana, so when you're starting out, you can listen to it, and it'll guide you through that. There's also a few other recordings on something called Metta or Goodwill Meditations, mm-hmm. too. So.
Would you address the fears of someone who might think this is faith-based if they have a different faith and they don't want Eastern philosophy? How do you handle that?
It's such a great question, Grace. Despite the fact that there's been hundreds of Buddhist religions that have grown up over the past 2,600 years, the man that invented the whole process was simply a king, a prince who grew up in his father's kingdom named Siddhartha Gautama. When he awakened after 6 years of study with some of the foremost spiritual teachers of his time, he studied these teachings. He rejected them as not leading to his goal. He studied the advanced meditation techniques of his time, rejected them as not leading to his goal. And after 6 years of arduous study, he finally, what I say is he developed full human maturity. It said that he awakened. And so that's what the word the Buddha means, the awakened one. He never, ever called himself an awakened one. He used to refer to himself in a word that says it's Tathagata. It simply means one who figured this out first. I'm using a little bit of a slang application to it, but that's what it means. And so he was, throughout his 45 years of his teaching career, he never tried to establish this as any type of religion. He never tried to establish himself as a god or someone to be worshipped. He went to great pains to always portray himself as a human being who just figured this thing out. And what he figured out was why all manners of disappointment and suffering arises, and the individual cause of that, which is craving and clinging. And so then he developed this Eightfold Path to recognize and eliminate craving and clinging. It can fit into any religion, provided that the religion allows for it. And some religions might not. You know, there's some religions that specifically say you should never meditate. But most religions
will. I didn't realize
that.
I don't want to mention it. I just, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't realize that there was... That yeah. said you shouldn't meditate. I didn't know that.
There are a few. And again, that's their position. That's fine. As long as your religion allows you to develop a meditation practice and look at a framework for seeing your life more clearly, it fits into any religion.
Thank you. That's very clarifying.
Yeah, it was a great question, too. It's an important one.
We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Mental Health Matters, and we'll be back in just a few seconds.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterton on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterton Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterton Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntertonChamberRadio.com app today.
Hunterton Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterton Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterton Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Good morning, Hunterton. This is Big C coming to you from HuntertonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterton County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterton kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterton County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterton, HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Welcome back to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and I have with me Grace Buchanan, my co-host, who's still in training a little bit, but will be my co-host officially. And we're very privileged today to have John Haspel, who is the instructor for integrative medicine. He's both at the Hunterton Medical Center and has his own private practice. Grace, you had a question that you wanted to ask.
Yes, I do. What is Hunterton Integrative Medicine?
Another great question, Grace. Hunterton Integrative Medicine is a department of Hunterton Healthcare, part of the Hunterton Medical Center and all the other endeavors that they're involved with. And it's just remarkable that they've started this department a little over 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago. So it's a way of integrating alternative practices that are complementary and supportive of well-being. And there's so many different modalities that are offered. There's two excellent acupuncture practitioners. One happens to be the director, Tamara Barisha, and Allison. I can't think of her last name. I just met her. There's a Tai Chi instructor who's her name is Judy Hasten, and she's just marvelous. There's yoga instructors. They hold mindfulness-based recovery workshops a couple times a year. They're just starting now a mindfulness for pain reduction. I think it's going to start next month. I'm not sure. And a few things that I'm sure are forgetting, but it's a really well-developed department now. It's helping a lot of people. So it's great to be a part of it. I'm the meditation and mindfulness instructor there.
Can you explain if there's a cost for the classes?
Most classes have a cost. My meditation class is $15 and I wanted to mention, to answer your question, yes, most classes and workshops have a cost. If anybody comes from NAMI or is recommended by NAMI, just mention the name. Their first class is free, wherever it is, whether it's at my center in Frenchtown or there. So,
great, please, thank you.
I'd like to put that out.
Now, you have two places, your own. You have said Frenchtown and...
Frenchtown. My meditation center is in Frenchtown.
Okay.
And then I teach in Flemington on Wednesday nights and Lambertville on Thursday nights at Phillips Barber.
Okay. But your own thing is in Frenchtown?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Tuesdays and Saturdays I'm there.
Okay.
We have workshops there, too. All the information's on the website.
But when you're in Lambertville, you teach at Phillips Barber Health Center.
Yep.
Okay. Got a question, surprisingly enough. How can meditation help with self-esteem?
One of the ways that meditation works is as we deepen our concentration, we're able to recognize repetitive patterns of thought. And so one of the ways that we maintain low self-esteem is to constantly think those same thoughts. I'm no good. I'm inadequate. You know, something terrible is going to happen to me. I just can't handle the world. As we deepen our meditation practice, again, within this broader framework, we're able to recognize these thought patterns. And once we recognize them, we can continue to deepen our concentration and mindfully bring them to an end. In other words, we gain the ability to think how we want to think.
Okay.
So one of the things that is amazing to me, I've learned a lot about the Buddha through reading something called the Pali Canon, is when he became awakened or gained full maturity, he knew how to think, but most importantly, he knew what to think about or what to be mindful of. In other words, what to hold in mind. It's a distracted mind that wants to hold everything in mind and keep everything into consideration, and that in itself leads to a measure of anxiety. When we gain the ability to think the way we want to think and to hold in mind what we want to hold in mind, that contributes to lasting peace and happiness within our minds.
Hmm. If someone, say, came to your class, all right, and you spoke to them about continuing it during the week until they came back the next time.
Yes.
Could they just go out on their back deck and sit and listen to the birds and the trees and the wind and...
You certainly can. It wouldn't have the same effect as using this method of being mindful of your breath. Excuse me. So sitting quietly and just being aware of what's going on around you, the birds singing, a beautiful sunset, whatever it might be, that's helpful for anyone. And it's a good practice to develop, just to be mindful of what's occurring. The meditation method and the refined mindfulness that I teach is a little bit more deeper and more well-focused than just sitting quietly.
Okay.
You know, there's an intention behind it. There's a specific method. One of the reasons why being mindful of your breath is so effective is that most people are dispassionate about their breath. They don't feel one way or the other. Whereas if you're meditating on, say, a candle or a flower or a phrase, you'll usually have some attachment to that. And that attachment can shade the results that you get from it.
Having a touch of emphysema from all my previous years of smoking,
yeah.
I focus on my breath because sometimes I'm out of it, you know. So, but now, if someone's mind is consistently running with thoughts, one right after the other, you know, and how can meditation quiet those thoughts?
It does that very directly. If you remember my instruction to notice that you're caught up in your thinking again, to acknowledge that and come back to the sensation of breathing, you're interrupting that ongoing process that most people call monkey mind. And many, many people, when they first come to meditation, say, I can't imagine being able to stop this monkey mind. But very, very quickly, if they develop this simple method within the broader framework, they're able to develop a measure of calm. You know, it takes a little bit of effort. One factor of that eightfold path that I keep mentioning is called right effort. And part of that is just putting in your time and meditating. the biggest problem that people with monkey mind, which is most people, have when they start meditation is that they simply feel bored. And they're bored out of their wits. They can't stand not having some type of stimulation going on. But every time you cease not meditating because you're bored, another word for boredom is a need for distraction, isn't it? Every time you meditate and avoid that need for distraction for just another moment or two, you're deepening your concentration, and then the meditation is successful.
Sometimes it's very difficult to separate from your crises in life.
Yes.
To clear your mind for a period of time to meditate.
Yes.
How do you get people like that to?
It's another great question, Larry. It's really part of the broader framework. But when you've had the kind of life that there's been a lot of difficulties and maybe even tragedies, you get caught up in that, and it's impossible not to. We're human beings, and we start creating an identity of these terrible things that have happened to
us.
I can go back into my childhood and talk about a bunch of them, but we all have them. It's all part of being in the world. And we start creating an identity about that. This happened to me. That happened to me. This might happen to me. How did that happen to me? How could such a terrible thing occur to me? Well, the truth of the matter is these terrible things are simply part of living in the world.
Or why me?
Yeah. When this gentleman, Siddhartha Gautama, awakened, and he started teaching the nature of suffering, he taught it in very simple and direct ways. He started with saying that birth is painful, sickness is painful, disease is aging is painful, and death is painful. Very simple and direct statements that we're all aware of, but we'd rather not face them. And when we decide that we're not going to face them, we're actually attaching ourselves to them by saying, I don't want this. You're creating an identity over what you want and what you don't want. The meditation method of deepening concentration within the broader framework to recognize where your craving and clinging thoughts are established allows us to end that type of thinking and that type of behavior. So it directly affects that type of thinking, that everything's happening to me. It's almost like you're living your life with a dark cloud over your head.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
And if you feel that way initially and you hold on to it long enough, you're going to develop depression and anxiety in your life. You just will. And again, I'm not trying to be simplistic about how that develops, because it's debilitating for many people, but it's that self-absorbed focus that continues it. And if you can find a way to interrupt that self-absorbed focus, you can at least diminish the effects of it.
How long is your average class?
That depends on how long-winded I am. And many of my students will laugh a little harder than that at it. I try to finish a class within about an hour and 15 minutes because they're in the evening and people are tired. But also, depending on the size of the class, I want to hear from everybody in the class if they have any questions, and I try not to let a class end until I've asked everybody that. So depending on the size of the class, sometimes it might go to an hour and a half or maybe even an hour and 45 minutes, but typically an hour and 15 minutes to an hour and a half.
Now, obviously, you've had people who, lack of a better word, were difficult. How do you give them tips or recommendations to practice what you're teaching in class during the week until the next class?
So are you talking about people having difficulty just starting out? Or people that are difficult in
both,
class.
Actually. I mean, people that are difficult, period, you know.
I get my fair share of them.
I would imagine, you know.
And that's all okay, because it comes from a lack of understanding. And so what I try to do, and we're very successful having a well-focused group of meditators, is keep the focus on my classes, on this meditation method within the broader framework. So every class – I give a talk that's related to meditation within this broader framework based on whatever the Buddha was teaching throughout those 45 years related to a direct teaching. And so if someone is not interested or they want something more than that, they're likely going to be disappointed. but I don't try to change them in any way. This is what I teach, and it's what I know, and it's what I know to be effective. Okay. As far as establishing it, even if you have some resistance, I've had many students that, despite their own initial resistance to it, took to the practice and eventually let go of that resistance and were able to develop an effective meditation practice within this broader framework.
All right. Now, it's pretty obvious that meditation helps the mind. Does it help the body?
Yes. There's many, many, many studies now about how the how any meditation practice can help you physically. Just beginning with lowering blood pressure, which means that it also will affect heart disease in that way. I just read a recent study that they believe that meditation, the right meditation method, will help with putting off the effects of dementia, which is really remarkable.
That is remarkable.
Yeah. And if you think about how we use the method, it is primarily for deepening concentration. And what is dementia? It's a lack of concentration. Right. Again, I'm being very simplistic right. about it, but it can directly impact that. It's been shown to reduce pain, and I just read another recent study that shows that it can be at least as effective as opioids. And think about all the trouble they have with people taking opioids now. Right. That if you can just develop this method, you can decrease your need for those types of medications. Overall, medical science is just now, in the last 10 or 15 years, coming to understand the effects of stress, that you could probably trace almost every illness to stress. And it directly diminishes stress in our lives. So, again, I'm not saying it's a cure-all for every problem in the world.
No, there is no cure-all for everything.
Yep, but it'll greatly help.
But it does, you know, there are things that help, and that's, you know, that's pretty awesome, mm-hmm. you know. At the medical center, they take insurance, correct? Like Medicare
yes.
or something like that, you know. When... I think we probably covered a lot of this, but when can meditation help someone the most?
Wow.
I don't mean to put you on the spot,
it's a great question. It gave me a pause to think about it. My quick answer is at any time, but that's not an answer to your question. You know, I think it can help people the most is when they're feeling the worst, when they feel like life is just falling down around them. It's probably also the most difficult time to begin.
Right.
But if you can take to practice very quickly, you'll start changing your point of view, which means that your experience of your life will change.
Could you give an example of a cancer patient that benefited?
Oh, I've had. I was going to say quite a few. I don't know if that's a fair characteristic. I've had a few, and I'm thinking of two people in specific, but there's been others. Almost immediately, they began to accept what was going on in their life rather than be stuck in fear. And, of course, you're diagnosed with cancer. You're going to be full of fear. But if you have this framework of seeing things more clearly, you can diminish that fear, which also means you're diminishing the stress that you're creating in your own life, which means you're helping your own recovery. Again, the more stress-free we can be, the more healthy we're going to be. So I would say it's another important time to start meditation, if you can. And then to be part of a supportive framework, meaning the sanghas that we have here in Frenchtown and Flemington and Lambertville.
What is a sangha?
Oh, I'm sorry. A sangha is simply a group of meditators. It's just a Pali word that's used to denote that. The support that I'm thinking of these two people, that these two folks have felt just being part of the sangha and being able to talk about it in a very dispassionate way. Nobody reacts. And we're all talking about how we use meditation to improve the quality of our lives has been so helpful to these two folks. So, yeah, I mean, whatever your condition might be, if you feel like you'd like to try a meditation practice, please come to one of our classes. Yeah, that's what they're for.
In the last 2 minutes we have, you want to give the website, phone number, all that again?
I will.
And, you know, the new class that you're starting up,
Yes, thank you. I'll give you three websites because they're all a little bit different. One is crossrivermeditation.com, and that has all my meditation information and years of articles and talks and some guided meditations. Mindfulness-basedrecovery.com is for the mindfulness-based recovery workshops. I also run workshops for people in the 12-step community that introduce the 12 steps in a very simple and direct way, and that's johnh12steps.com. And I have weekly meetings Tuesday night at 7:15 and Saturday mornings at 8:45 at my center in Frenchtown. Wednesday evenings here at 100 Integrative Medicine at 8:15, and Thursday at Phillips Barber at 7:30. And my number is 908-391-9079. Thank you for letting me say that.
No problem. John, I have to tell you, you are coming back. I will have you back. I hope you want to come back.
I do.
But, I just find it very interesting. I really do. And I definitely mean it. You will be back on.
Thank you.
And I appreciate all the good work you're doing. And we will be back again next week, same time, same station. Remember, folks, mental health really does matter. Yeah. We'll see you next week. Grace and I say so long, and John, you will be back.
Thank you.
Take care.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
This is Tony Clark, Parrot Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
USA Radio News with Kelly Sloan.
Why the killer made these murderous statements, he did so in a chilling, calm, and deliberate manner.
That was FBI Special Agent Ronald Hopper earlier when the FBI released limited transcripts of conversations between Orlando shooter Omar Mateen and police. Hopper says Mateen swore allegiance to ISIS. Major changes in Donald Trump's campaign. The presumptive GOP presidential nominee has parted ways with Corey Lewandowski. In recent weeks, Lewandowski had sparred with newer members of the campaign strategy team. Senior advisor Barry Bennett believes campaign chairman Paul Manafort will take over.
Yeah, I think Paul is totally in charge. Well, he's the campaign chairman, so yeah, he's the person in charge.
He appeared in a Fox News interview. The move seems to have been a surprise since Lewandowski accompanied Trump at several campaign events this past weekend. This is USA Radio News.
QL1, this is Control. Does Rocket Mortgage require me to fill out a bunch of paperwork?
That's negative, Control. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans is the first on-demand mortgage machine that quickly and seamlessly imports your financial data. You can go through the entire mortgage process on your own and completely online.
Copy that, QL1, but if I wanted to speak to someone, do you think they're out there?
They're out there, all right. I've made contact before. In fact, according to J.D. Power, they've provided award-winning client service for 6 years in a row.
Roger that, QL1. It's nice to know they're out there, wherever they are.
Detroit, Control. They're in Detroit. Over.
3, 2, 1.
Rocket Mortgage at QuickenLoans.com. Push button. Get mortgage.
Rocket.
Visit for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NML.